Hey everybody, welcome to the Smart to Death podcast. I'm Kyle.
And I am Anthony.
And today, we have a special treat for you guys. We are here with former TNA X Division Champion, NWA Tag Team Champion, ECW World Television Champion, and WWE Cruiserweight Champion. Everyone, welcome Kid Cash.
How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We're excited to talk to you. We're excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. We've not have had someone quite as decorated as you have been in your career on our show, so it's a real treat for us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I tried.
I kind of want to start with you pretty recently. So in 2015, you had a retirement match against Chase Owens, and you've been kind of off the grid a little bit in terms of wrestling in our eyes, but we're seeing a resurgence of you in 2018. So what made you want to come back to wrestling?
I wouldn't really call it a resurgence. It started with a couple of guys that I've been helping out, and you know, just with advice and giving them direction and stuff. They're called the Arrow Club, and it's actually three of them: Kyle, Joe, and then Desi. It's a female, and they're true 100% Native American Indians. A couple of them actually still live on reservations and stuff, living the traditional Indian life, you know, and stuff, which I respect. You know, I'm white, but, you know, my family history has, you know, two different tribes of Indian. I have Seminole and Cherokee in my family. And, you know, so growing up in the mountains of Virginia, you know, my family was, you know, kind of close to their heritage and stuff. And there was a little bit of Native American ways to our living, you know, when we were younger. So, you know, the guys are just great guys. They're really good workers, and I just believe in them, and I love the name, the Arrow Club. You know, I mean, before there was a Bullet Club, there really was an Arrow Club. You know, so I've just been helping them out for probably almost 2 years now, just giving them advice and stuff. And one of them couldn't make a show in Oklahoma, and the question got brought up if I would tag team with either one of them if we ever needed it. You know, and I said sure. Of course I would, you know. And they called me out on it, so I actually went out and you know, did a show for them and stuff, and really enjoyed it, you know. So, but it's just that company. I'm not really throwing myself out there that much, you know. I'm doing conventions and seminars and stuff, and you know, I have a really, you know, good shoot job and stuff like that. So I mean, it's nothing that I could drop and leave and go back to wrestling full time in no way, shape, or form. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I went to college and stuff while I was in, you know, in the wrestling business. You know, I had a lot of downtime, you know, so I did some online college and, you know, some MTSU in Nashville, you know, Murfreesboro, and got a degree in business. And then whenever I retired, I went, I'm a construction project manager, is what I am now. So, but I don't, I don't want to wrestle full time, but I'm just having fun. I mean, you know, it's not, I'm still technically retired, if you want to say, and whenever these guys need me, I'm, you know, I just love them to death, and I think they're going to make it one day, and if I can help them make it, then that's what I'll do, you know. So that's where the resurgence came from. You know,
I think that's got to be pretty interesting. Like for us, usually when we interview guys, they're, you know, at the beginning of their career, those are the guys that we typically get to interview. And so hearing that you've gone through a career in wrestling and gone through college, and we get to hear that there is a life for wrestlers outside of wrestling, I think that is incredibly interesting. And I think it's an interesting situation you're in too, that you're like, these guys are in the beginning, you're at the end of your career, and that's got to be pretty cool.
Right. Well, you know, I always, whenever I was younger and I was in the business, I was running with, you know, Ricky Morton and the Rock and Roll Express very early in my career, you know. And in that time, I wasn't really in a dressing room too that often on an indie scene, you know what I'm saying? every dressing room I was in, I mean, I was sitting across from Jerry Lawler and the Moondogs and Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart, you know, just so many, Jake the Snake Roberts, you know, just so many of the names. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was wrestling the Bushwhackers whenever I was 20 years old, you know, in state fairs, you know, in Virginia and North Carolina and stuff like that, tag teaming with Ricky Morton, you know. And so I saw it. I saw it coming a long time ago. You know, I mean, I would see, you know, the old veterans sitting there in the dressing room, could barely bend over and pick, you know, tie their shoes, mm-hmm. And get up and walk around. And I knew that there was going to be an end, you know, and you can't help but think that it is. But a lot of guys don't see that, I don't guess, so they don't want to believe it, you know. And I gave myself a certain amount of time, and I actually went 5 more years over because TNA had called me back for the last time, and I did about 2.5-3 years with those guys, and then that was about it. Did about 2 years of just doing the indies over in Europe and, you know, and stuff like that, and then a little bit over here, and then I just decided that was enough, you know. And a lot of people don't know either that during my wrestling career, when the days that I wasn't wrestling and I was at home, except for the WWE period, but ECW, TNA, WCW, and all the other companies, I mean, you had quite a few days off during the week, you know. So whenever I was at home, I was actually working for the Steel Union and the Carpenters Union in the state of Tennessee. So I was making top money then, you know, as a tradesman, you know, up in the 20s and the $30 an hour, you know, working 20, 30 hours a week, you know, and then going to wrestle sometimes 40. And then I started doing a Monday through Friday. I got hooked up on a good schedule with the union, and they went for it, and they thought it was cool that I was wrestling too. So they let me work 4 10s, and I could do all my wrestling. So I would work 4 10-hour days. Thursday night I was either getting on a plane, or Friday morning I was getting on a plane.
Oh, good gosh, man. That schedule sounds haunting.
Yeah, we did a lot of shows on Sunday, and sometimes 2 shows on Sunday. And then I would fly back out like late Sunday night, or, you know, after my match, if it was early, you know, a 5 or 6 o'clock show, go straight to the airport, get on a plane, come home, get enough rest to get up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning to go work in the field, you know. And go to college too, because I didn't want to do that forever. I didn't want to break my back, you know, after wrestling. So I knew that I had to get a degree. So I got international business and marketing degree. And so with the success that I had in the construction industry, because my family was in the construction industry, so I grew up in it. You know, I was working on a construction field when I was 15 years old. You know. Welding pipe. I was a pipe owner for a little bit as a teenager, you know. So I had all these trades, carpentry, steel, structural, and the welding behind me. And why not use it, you know? But if I'm going to use it, then I might as well take it to that top level, like I try to do with wrestling, you know. Make the best, you know, make the most money you can instead of busting your ass, mm-hmm. you know. So over time, I went from a foreman to a superintendent to, an OSHA superintendent. And then now I'm a project manager.
Wow.
It's going to end. People, so many of the guys just, I don't know, I guess they just don't want to think that it will.
Yeah.
And they don't prepare, you know. Some guys do and some guys don't. Thank God I was one of those guys that saw it years and years ago, you know.
Yeah. I hope that you're able to relax a little bit now.
I love it.
So, love it. So you mentioned, you met Ricky Morton, and you also mentioned that your family wasn't part of wrestling. So how did you get into wrestling?
I was in a gym in my hometown of Waynesboro, Virginia, and there was a local guy there who was a wrestler and a promoter. Marvin Ward, and him and another guy, Preston Fitzgerald, they did like little indie shows and stuff like that. But the thing about the Marvin Ward guy, he went to Ivan Koloff's wrestling school way back in the day, and that's back whenever they were jobbers still, you know. So Ivan, you know, he kind of bred jobbers for NWA back way back. and he was one of those guys. Well, then when he left doing that, he came back home and started running his own shows. And I just happened to be in the gym one day, and he was in the gym trying to get promotion, you know, to bring some of the guys in. I think, you know, but he ran good shows. The first show that I ever saw, that I ever went to, was his show. And there was the Road Warriors, there was the Rock and Roll Express, Tim Horner, Killer Kyle, you know, there was Terry Funk. So, you know, he booked, you know, good talent, and he had good shows. But he saw me in the gym, and he was like, you know, you look like Brian Pillman. And I was like, I've never heard that one before. He goes, well, you also look like Owen Hart, too. You know who he is? And I was like, I've heard the name, you know. I was a wrestling fan. I watched it. You know, I grew up on NWA. And I don't know. I wasn't thinking about being a professional wrestler, you know, because I've been, since I was 7 years old, I was boxing from 7 to 10. And then from 10 on, I was doing, you know, Aikido or wrestling in high school and, you know, those kind of sports. So I didn't think about being a professional wrestler, you know. And I went to the show. He invited me to come to the show. He got, you know, had me come in the back, and I was meeting all the guys, and, you know, sitting there talking to Ricky Morton, and Ricky and I just connected, you know. It was really cool. I mean, he was just the down-to-earth guy, and we just talked and had great conversation and stuff. And, you know, before the end of the night, he was like, man, you need to get into this sport. You know, you got, you know, pretty muscular kid, you're a good looking guy, you can make a lot of money doing this. And I was like, well, you know, something to think about, I guess. He gave me his card, and we kind of exchanged messages from time to time, you know, for about a month. And then just, I don't know, had a bad day at work one day, and went to lunch, and came home, and his card was still laying on the table. So I actually just picked it up to call him, and I was like, hey, you know, you offered me to come down to Tennessee, and if I did, you would take care of me and get me into the wrestling business. And he's like, yeah, I sure did. I was like, was you serious? And he was like, the day you show up, he says, I got you. And I was like, is that your word? And he goes, that's my word. So believe it or not, I went back to work. I quit my job. I got my final check, cleaned out my bank account, had my mom and sister and brother come to my apartment and clean it all out, told them to take anything and everything you want, just don't leave anything in the place. And I went right across the street to the office and told them that I was moving out of town for work, and that was it, breaking the lease. And I left town with nothing but clothes in the back of my Geo Storm, and I made it to Johnson City, Tennessee, in about 4.5 hours from where I lived. And it just went from there. He took me to Elizabethton, Tennessee, which is beside Johnson City. Smoky Mountain Wrestling was a big thing around here at the time. And so there was a house that a lot of the wrestlers lived in when they came to town and stuff and got to get started and stuff like that. And Kane, Glenn Jacobs was living there. New Jack, Mustafa, Anthony Michaels. There was a, you know, a list of people that was in and out of that house, you know. He dropped me off and said, get to know everybody. And I did. And about 6 o'clock the next morning, he knocked on the door and told me to get up. We went on the road for a week. And I just sat in the back of the car, and he taught me how to wrestle by watching. I didn't even get in the ring for like the longest time, just because, you know, we were going to shows. By the time we get to the show, the ring was already up. People were already coming in. They got to set their gimmicks up. They got to hustle their pictures and stuff like that, you know. So really wasn't much chance for me to get in the ring. But I watched. They asked me questions for the longest time. I sat in the back seat of the car in between the shows, and they just asked me questions. Tell me what I saw. Tell me what you saw. Did you see this? Did you see that reaction? Did you see that? You know, and I did that for about a year. And one day at a show, Greg the Hammer Valentine couldn't show up, and the guy needed a replacement. Ricky automatically just said, my boy can do it. And I wrestled Wahoo McDaniels.
Wow. That was your first match?
The day. First match, and he broke my ankle.
Oh my gosh.
But your first match is against Wahoo McDaniels. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure was. And he, like I said, I was green. I'd never been in the ring before. I mean, other than just getting in there, messing around here and there. But I was athletic, and I knew all of the moves by heart when you asked me. I hadn't had a chance to perform them yet, you know. So I was a little sloppy, and Wahoo was old school. You know, do you guys know what Carney is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, back then, all the boys spoke Carney. Uh-huh. That was one of the first lessons I learned in the business, was how to speak Carney. And but it was after this event happened. But, I didn't know, you know, Ricky hadn't taught me any Carney at that point. So Wahoo, in his matches, that's all he did was talk Carney. And I had no clue of what he was saying on anything. I mean, from start to finish. I think the match lasted about 5 minutes. He just got aggravated, you know, because I couldn't understand a damn word he was saying. He was basically just beating my ass, you know. And he chopped me really fucking hard. He told me, he was like, he set me up in a turnbuckle, and he's like, "If I was you, I'd just blow all my air out." And dumbass me looked at him, and I was like, "Huh?" And, he chopped the. There's no sound with him. You know, there wasn't. There wasn't no big loud pop. It was just a hard thump, and it felt like his hand touched your spine. And there's no joke, because he was a big, big man. And he hit me so hard he knocked the breath out. I mean, I dropped to my hands and knees. You ever had the breath knocked out of you?
Oh, yeah. Probably not like you did.
Yeah, trying to grab the breath, and I'm on my hands and knees, and the only thing I could see was white moccasins walking in a circle around me. And then he kicked me. Yeah, and then he kicked me so hard in the side, and it brought the air back, but it felt like it just bruised my liver, you know. So I rolled over on my back, and he picked my leg up, and he looked down at me, and he was like, "Welcome to the business, kid." And he turned, he did a spinning toe, the most simplest move, probably one of the oldest moves in wrestling. Mm-hmm. And he actually turned it on and cranked it. Oh. And it didn't break the ankle, but it dislocated the socket. So, yeah. So that was my first go around, and I was in the dressing room, and he found out that I was Ricky's boy, you know, and he came up to apologize, and he goes, "Well, I'll tell you what," he goes, "if I see you," he says, "some kids your age don't make it back after something like that, but if I see you again," he goes, "I'll throw you some respect." And I was just mad as hell at him, and I was like, "I don't give a fuck what you do," you know, and I was just that mad. And then the crazy thing about it, 7 months later, I wrestled him again in Richmond, Virginia at the State Fair. And it was a completely different story. I had 7 months to get educated, 7 months to realize that, hey, you know, I have a black belt. I can fight back too if I want to, you know. And, you know, because I was told to respect, you know, the veterans and, you know, listen to what they say and, you know, and all this other stuff. I didn't know that you were allowed to fight back if you were getting beat on, you know?
Yeah.
So, after further, ass chewings from Ricky after that match, I kind of like woke up, you know, and it all changed for me right there. I just woke up, you know, things just happened. I started, you know, my athleticism really kicked in and stuff, and my knowledge, and, you know, just paying attention to everything Ricky and Robert were telling me. And, you know, there were so many times I was in the car and we'd stop off in Memphis and I'd be sitting beside Honky Tonk Man or Sid Vicious or Jimmy Hart or Brian Lawler or Jerry Lawler, you know, going to the shows together. So I got a lot of information from a lot of different top names, you know, mm-hmm. from back in that day. Mm-hmm. And I just used it, you know. And one thing they always did tell me, remember where you came from, but also know that there's a new age, you know, that's always around the corner. Mm-hmm. So you got to evolve. You got to mm-hmm. keep doing what's up with the times, you know. So high flying, it was in. It was starting to come in at that time. I was a cruiserweight size guy with, you know, big arms, shoulders, and chest. So it just kind of fit, you know. So I started doing high flying moves. I was able to do them. I was athletic enough to do them. And crowd seemed to like it, so I kept doing it. But I would also throw the old school, you know, selling and arm drags and hip tosses and all that stuff, you know, in my matches as well, you know.
So you're telling me that you walked into your first match with Wahoo McDaniels and Kid Cash started his wrestling career with a shoot fight?
On his part, yeah. Yeah, I didn't, there was no defense on my end. I just was dumb, you know. Yeah. I didn't know, you know, that you're supposed to, you know, take up for yourself, you know. When you hear respect to veterans over and over and over and over again, you know, then that's what you think. Yeah. You know, don't talk back to them, even if they're mad at you, just, you know, say yes sir and that's it, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I found out the hard way.
So
that was
your
baptism in the fire.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So you're in Tennessee. So how do you end up in Philadelphia and start working for ECW?
Man, at one point I kind of broke away from Ricky, and I was just getting booked a whole lot by, you know, on my own. And, you know, I was bringing something new to all these towns and stuff. I was a new look, new style, you know, and stuff like that. So I was getting booked a lot throughout Carolinas, Georgia, Virginia, just all over the East Coast, really. And Rob Van Dam, what's his name, Greg Price. Him and Rob Van Dam were, you know, they're all really good friends and stuff like that. So back in the day, Van Dam used to live in Savannah, Georgia. So him and Greg were good friends. Greg run these really good shows. He was really smart. You know, he knew how to promote a show. He knew how to get backing and all that stuff, you know. So he would bring big time talent in and pay them big money and draw big crowds. But I was wrestling that night, and I believe it was Winston-Salem, and Rob was, you know, of course, there with Greg, and he just watched my match, and he stopped me in the back, and he was like, dude, he was like, he goes, you're pretty damn good. He goes, you ever thought about going to ECW? At that time, I hadn't really heard of ECW, and I was like, I'm not really familiar with it. So he was telling me about it, and I was like, yeah, sure, you know, we'll have to, you know, talk about going up sometime. You know, Philadelphia's a long damn way, you know, from Johnson City, Tennessee. So, you know, wanted to talk business here. So I went home straight from the show. I drove 5 hours, you know, 5 hours in, did the show, 5 hours back to Johnson City. I got home about 3 o'clock in the morning. And at that time, ECW did come on in Johnson City, but it came on at about 2:30 in the morning on the FSN channel. And so I just happened to come in whenever it was about 30 minutes into the show. And I turned it on, and there was Little Guido and Mikey Whipwreck and a couple of other guys that I don't really remember anymore. But I was just watching their match, and I was like, well, hell, that's what I do. You know, I'm like, I can do that. You know, well, shit, I do that better than that. You know, what the hell? It's like, this is that company he was talking about. So I called him up. I was like, yo, dude, I was like, I'm watching the show now. I was like, I'd do all that right there. And he goes, I know, that's what I'm saying. He goes, you'd be great up there. He goes, we're going to be in Philadelphia tomorrow night. If you make it up, I can get you a match. And I was like, oh, Philadelphia. Okay, tomorrow. And this is like 3 o'clock in the morning. And my girlfriend at the time, we sat down and talked about it, and she was like, well, it's on TV. You're looking for TV exposure. Mm-hmm. This guy seems to know what he's talking about. You know, he sounds pretty big, you know. And I was like, yeah, you know, goes to Japan a lot and stuff. And working for this company, he must, you know, must be all right if he's working for him. And so I didn't even go to bed that night. I just went on ahead, I unpacked and repacked, took a shower. I was on the road by probably about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I drove all the way to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I got there record time because there was no traffic, and I got there at about 12 noon. So I did really, really good drive time. So I got to the hotel where Rob was at, checked with him, went to his room, took a shower, cleaned up, went, got something to eat. We went to the building, and when I walked in, Paul introduced him, so he was like, I was David Jericho back then. I don't know if you guys know that or not. Yeah. First thing he said when I walked up to him, he was like, David Jericho, how's Ricky Morton? I'd never met this man in my life, you know. He already knew who I was, you know. So I was like, well, Ricky's great. And he goes, great. He goes, did you bring your gear? And I was like, I did. And he goes, good. He goes, you're on in 15 minutes, first match.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, okay. And I didn't have time to call anything with anybody. It was a six-man. I think it was Axel Rotten, Hack Myers. What was that one Dudley? Another TJ. I can't remember his last name, but then that was Mikey Whipwreck. Yeah, Little Guido. We had a six-man. Didn't call a damn thing with anybody. I was thrown on it at the last minute. They already had their shit down. And I was like, let's do it, man. Baptism under fire. Let's do it, you know. And this is how I like it, you know. And Tommy Dreamer, because back then I was still wearing the Rock and Roll Express outfit, you know. And Tommy Dreamer saw me. He goes, listen, he goes, do not get upset or hurt because this crowd is different. He goes, you're probably not used to these people and they're going to eat you alive just because you're dressed like that and they don't know who you are. And I was like, hey, no worries. I'm just here to work, you know. Music played. I went out and what was fucking nuts is all the smart marks knew exactly who I was. Because I was tagging with Ricky, you know, and they knew me. So when I came out, the crowd was actually chanting rock and roll.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah. So I went out, and without calling anything, I just kind of called, you know, I'm old. I came in with Ricky, so I'm used to calling pretty much everything in the ring, not out in the dressing room at that point, you know. And I just started calling shit to them, you know, to them while we were in the ring, and they were doing it, and I was doing it, and I got my moves in and did a couple hurricanranas and took a vicious freaking chair shot from Axel Rotten and bent the chair completely ear to ear right on my head.
Oh my gosh, he cracked
me good. Didn't throw my hands up because everybody was talking in the back. If you throw your hands up, you get fired, yeah. You know, so which was not true. It, you know, you don't. They wouldn't fire you. They would probably demote you a little bit, but you wouldn't get fired from that. But yeah, didn't throw my hands up, took the full force, and I mean, I don't know if that impressed him or what, but the match was over with. I went to the back. I said, Paul, what'd you think? And he goes, I loved it. He goes, I was like, well, I'd like to come back. He goes, good. He goes, we're in Staten Island tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
That's how it started. Yeah, and that's just kind of the way it was. We did the first go around. I was there twice. The first go around, we didn't even really talk about money. We just was working, and next thing I know, he handed me a paycheck on the last night, and it was a nice paycheck, and I was like, oh, gee, thanks. You know, he goes, I can't fly you in. He goes, but if you can drive to every show, you got a match. And I was like, you got it. So I did that for about a year, and then I wound up going back in 1998 and then stayed with him until they closed in 2000.
So I want to ask you, you mentioned Heyman a few times, and that was one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about, is we hear stories all the time about Heyman, the on-screen character, Heyman, the manager. What was working with Paul Heyman creative? You won an ECW TV title there, so I'm sure you were involved quite a bit in the writer's room with him. What is it like working with him? I mean, he's one of the best minds in wrestling of all time.
We never spent a day in the writer's room.
Wow.
Everything was ours. He liked the way I looked. He liked my character. He told me to, I mean, simple, just told me one day, he was like, you're going to be on the microphone more. You're going to be on TV more. Just kind of, you know, find, if you haven't already, find your character. And I was like, okay. And that's what I did. I just went home and I already knew, you know, because I was taught already from the two legends, you know, and not to mention the other legends. On how to run your character, how to do a promo. I just hadn't had a chance to do it there in ECW yet, you know?
Yeah.
So once I did, they were like, Jace, just do whatever you want. You do you. And that's exactly what he told us. Anytime we had a match, anytime we had a promo, he would be like, he would give me the finer points of the promo. And he would be like, okay, you got 1 minute. Talk about, you know, your upcoming match with Little Guido. You know, you're teaming up with Nova. It's a slow start, but you're still doing it. Throw that in there, and then just go with it. And we did. Every promo I did there was right off the hip. Every match I did was called strictly by me and the guy that I was working.
Wow. That's so different than today's wrestling. That's insane. Yeah. Speaking of speaking of today's wrestling, and you did work heavily with the NWA. I want to ask you how you feel about the NWA like resurgence that this is going on right now, because it does look like that's something that's happening, and that's, you know, one of the most prestigious thing with all the guys you worked with in the past. What does it mean to you that they're trying to get back into the spotlight?
Well, NWA, you know, I grew up watching it, and before it actually closed down, I was lucky enough to be able to be a part of it very short time. But, you know, plus, my trainer was an 8-time World Tag Team NWA champion, you know, so I have, you know, of course I have a closeness to that company. I don't know what they're doing with it, but I hope they take all of these franchises that's across the country and shut them down. I mean, because that's not the NWA, you know. The NWA was one entity. It was one company, not IWA, NWA, not NWA, TNA. I hated it whenever I was the tag team champions, because I hated to be called the NWA, TNA tag team champion.
Yeah.
I didn't like it, you know, just because of my, you know, I was an older guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
But I just didn't like it. But if I think Billy Corgan's got it now. But yeah, if they make it just one company, you know, one belt, one world champion, one TV champion, one light heavyweight champion, instead of, you know, because, you know, after I left TNA for the last time, I did quite a few indies before I retired, and just every company I was going to was an affiliate of NWA. You know, it's like, well, how many freaking champions do you have, you know, in the country? So I hope they just make it one company, kind of like Ring of Honor, WWE, you know, NA, one company. And I hope it does good, honestly. I mean, I would love to see it come back and do good, be some form of competition anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned
and they got the, you know.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut
people
you off.
With, oh, yeah. They got people with money backing that thing. There's no reason why they can't get it on TV, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, they do have money now with Billy. You mentioned TNA, though. I'm curious to get your thoughts on your first stint with TNA and compared with your last stint with TNA.
It was the same. Just bigger. They just lied to me bigger. That's all it was. I mean, I don't know. God love them. I don't know, man. That company, it was the first time, it was like all these people in the office were not only trying to run the show, but they were also trying to be the superstars as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I was there the first time, Jeff would never, ever drop the damn belt. If he did, it wasn't for very long. I was there, I think I came in on the second show that they did. I was like part of the start of that company, you know, and we were doing the X division was the only thing that was drawing ratings on any of those pay-per-views that we were doing every Wednesday. But you know, even though I came from ECW and I had signed with WCW and you know been around the world and stuff like that, held a few, you know, recognizable titles and stuff like that, had a name, the only thing they did with guys like me is they wanted just make stars of people that they were just trying to, you know, make their own stars. That's what they was trying to do. AJ Styles, America's Most Wanted, Chris Harrison, James Storm, Petey Williams, you know, those kind of guys that were close to the, you know, the boys, close to the people that were on the inside, you know? So they didn't care about anything other than us using our name power and our draw to get these guys over and turn them into stars. And, you know, at that point, I was still kind of hot in the business, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to just be laying down every single night for somebody, you know. And to get them over, I still had a career too, you know. And so I wanted to be at least competitive with these people, you know. I mean, damn. And then it was with money too. Well, the first conversation was like, hey, we're just opening the doors. We're doing this every single Wednesday. It's costing us a lot of money. And, can you do it for this amount? And after the first year, if we're making, you know, money, then we'll give you more. And I was like, oh, okay. It didn't matter to me at that point because I had just left XWF.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and yeah. They had just went under. But when I was with XWF, Jimmy Hart had, you know, worked me up a deal with the Home Shopping Network, QVC. That's who owned it. That's who was paying the bills. And,
I had no idea about that.
I signed a no-compete clause with the contract. So I had a pretty nice little yearly figure. And even though the QVC had to shut it down because they had lost investments over in India in their plants and all that stuff, you know, their warehouses. So they had to back out because originally they put up like $30 or $40 million to get it going. And it was starting to go good. We were going about to get a TV deal because they made like 10 tapes or something like that of shows down in Universal Studios, had a lot of big stars on it. Mm-hmm. And stuff, and but whenever they backed out, they still had to keep paying me for another 2 years.
Oh my God!
So I got a paycheck for 2 years after that company shut down, and I was also working for TNA, even though it wasn't the greatest, you know, pay. It was still TV exposure, you know what I'm saying? It was keeping my name out there, and it was that little bit extra on what I was already getting. Y'all gotta forgive me, man. I got allergies and I'm coughing and stuff like that.
You're good. We're in Texas. We always have allergies down here, yeah. So there's always something. I just have one. I have one more question for you. And you've mentioned multiple times you're an older guy, and recently another older guy, The Undertaker, said that guys nowadays need to concentrate more on their character than on flippy moves and, like, you know, their moveset in the ring. And with you training guys now, I want to know what your thoughts are on that and what you think new wrestlers need to concentrate on now to get over.
Well, the thing about me is that I'm not Undertaker size, okay? I'm not his weight and stuff like that. So he is going to rely more on his character than his athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I'm a cruiserweight. I'm 5'10". I'm, 100, whenever I'm in good condition and weight, you know, and stuff, I'm about 170 to 180, you know, so I have to get out there and be more productive. You know, I have to get out there and be more active athletic wise. My character is still there, but it's just not as big and as over as what, you know, his is, because that's what he relies on the absolute most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he's still athletic. Don't get me wrong,
right.
But, you know, there's a difference in the athleticism between a guy that's 6'6" and a guy that's 5'10".
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm quicker, I'm faster. So I'm not the big draw that he is as far as, you know, spectacle. When you see, you know, a professional wrestler, when you see The Undertaker, it's all spectacle, you know, and that's what draws you in. When you see me and my music plays, you're not going to see that big spectacle because I don't have the features to go along with it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I have to get out there and become a spectacle in my athleticism. So I think, you know, it goes both ways. I think, you know, the smaller guys, you know, the 205 guys on TV and stuff, they might want to pick it up on their character a little bit, you know, but they also should keep their athleticism moving because that's what got them the job to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
The big guys, you know, I mean, of course, keep doing what you're doing. If you're getting over on character alone, then don't change.
Mm-hmm.
But WWE is character based.
Right.
Okay. Ring of Honor is athleticism based. TNA, to be honest with you, I have yet to check. I don't get the pop channel, so I can't watch TNA at all. So I have no clue who is even there anymore. You know, I mean, I hear things here and there, but from my understanding, it's a whole new roster.
Yeah.
So I don't have a clue. I don't even know how any of those people wrestle. I don't know what half of them look like or what their names are. So, and that's all because I don't get it. You know, but if I got it, I would probably check it out. You know,
sure.
I was never a fan of the six-sided ring and all that shit. You know, so. It just didn't, it didn't make no sense to me, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're not Mexico, and everybody knows that, you know, that's what they have in Mexico. Why are we trying to be like them?
Yeah.
You know, just keep it traditional. How about we amp up the characters in the wrestling instead of worrying about everything being based around a six-sided ring?
Yeah.
You know, that's all they would say, six-sided ring, and the six-sided TNA ring, uh-huh. You know, like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they sure did love that six-sided ring.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
I hated it.
It caught my eye. It caught my eye. I'm not going to lie.
No, those ropes were short. Whenever you have those, you know, the six sides, the ropes are shorter.
Uh-huh.
And those are cables. So when you're hitting those things, dude, it's like hitting a freaking guardrail.
Oh, oh no. Kidding, man. I never thought about that.
Oh, it tears your back out of hell, man. I used to walk out of that building with my back on fire, dude. I would have to go to the hotel after eating and stuff like that and just ice my back.
Oh.
I had bruises all over my side where you hit the ropes and stuff, man, across your shoulders, catching bones on your shoulders and that bruised the bone. Yeah, I mean, they was good to do moves off of, don't get me wrong. But, man, hitting them things, good Lord, man. It was like snapping your neck.
Oh, good grief. Well, we're about to let you go. I got one last question for you. You've worked with ECW, WWE, TNA, even had a little stint in WCW. What was your favorite moment in wrestling?
You know, I had a good time, man. I can't really put it all down into one, but I would probably go as to say winning the ECW TV title was probably my highlight of my actual career. That's what got me going. You know what I'm saying? And once I won that belt, I mean, I was already on my way up, but once I won the belt, it's like my name instantly changed, you know, it went from, you know, Kid Cash to, the KID Kid Cash, yeah. You know, and of course, you know, being able to go to the WWE and win a title there, and then, I mean, not only won a title, but you remember the Pitbulls, you know? So, I mean, Jamie and I, for the no longer than what we were together, we made an impact, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so just being a part of that was really cool because, you know, WWE is the absolute pinnacle of wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about it, once you get to the WWE and you do your run, once you leave the WWE, you kind of pretty much are backsliding in your career. Hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
You're either going to be an indie guy, you're going to go over to Japan, or you're going to, you know, go to Ring of Honor or somewhere like that, or TNA, you know, and possibly not, no one know how to, you know, write for you, or no one know how to get you over,
yeah.
You know.
It's very
so,
rare.
But when you make it to the top of the pinnacle of wrestling, I mean, that makes you feel good because they would not have hired you. WWE does not hire anybody that they don't have faith in,
mm-hmm.
and that they don't consider a top athlete. And it's really cool to be in that mix of everybody like that, you know, because when I was in the business, I mean, to be completely honest, I mean, the money was great. The traveling was great. My dream was to be noted as one of the best light heavyweight wrestlers in the world in the wrestling, you know,
yeah.
When my name was brought up after I retired. That was probably my top goal. I wanted more of my name to keep going on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just what I was in it for, you know. A lot of guys get into it to be rich and famous and to, you know, get laid by all the chicks. I want to be known as one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. You know, as far as a light heavyweight, of course. You know.
Yeah.
But so.
I mean, I will never forget the image of, I believe it was you and ECW, and you get on the top rope and you do a front flip into the crowd, and that image is just like ingrained in my brain. So.
Well, where it took everybody down?
Yes.
Yeah, that was awesome. I liked it. Yeah. And it sucks, too, because, you know, it was such a long time ago. The only recording I have of it is on VHS. Yeah. So it's all grainy and shit. You can't even see it anymore, hardly. You know, I've watched it so many times. Just a cool moment, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just a cool moment whenever you know. I mean, and that right there says, you know, says it for me. You know, Paul Heyman, you know, he met me that one time. He saw my one match. And he just saw something in me, and he gave me the opportunity, you know. And Paul Heyman is the reason why Kid Cash is who he became, you know. Ricky Morton trained me to wrestle. I refined myself. But then Paul Heyman set the stage for me to go as far as I wanted to go, you know. And I got, you know, that's a man that I'll have to thank until the day I die, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, what an interview.
Yeah, this was awesome,
man. I feel like we've only, like, scratched the surface of Kid Cash, too. We have so many notes here.
Yeah, we'd love to do a follow-up and hear more. This was incredibly interesting to us. Thank you. I'm sure our listeners will really enjoy this. It's not very often we get to hear guys that have quite this history of wrestling and this story, and it was awesome to hear. I really appreciate your time.
Well, this is, I mean, even though I retired in 2015 at 25 years, you know, I kind of picked it back up. So technically, I've been wrestling for coming up on 30 years.
Wow.
And so, you know, I started in 1990. And so I got a whole hell of a lot of stories, you know. But I was really fortunate, man. I mean, have you heard the term, the right place at the right time?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what happened to me. Hmm. I mean, I was at the right place at the right time. I met the right people at the right time. And, you know, just having a country boy type of attitude kind of helped out a lot. You know, I was a little naive to things and, you know, at first and stuff. But once I figured everything out, you know, people saw that I had a backbone too, you know, and that I wouldn't back down and I was a hard worker. You know, ECW, I broke my jaw and never took a damn night off. You know, I mean, had my jaw wired shut. You know, I break my jaw on a Friday night and go get my jaw wired shut on a Saturday morning. And I wrestled an indie show with Jerry Lynn Saturday night against AJ Styles and David Young. And then the very next night, I drove all the way from there to Birmingham, Alabama, and wrestled the pay-per-view.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. Well, guys.
Sure did. Yeah, I was, you know, I just wanted it, you know, so I lived it, I ate it, I breathed it, and, you know, I mean, it got me where I wanted to go in the business, but, you know, like right now, I'm just kind of even, like, really getting reacquainted with my own family, you know, because I was on the road for so long, and, you know, between wrestling and, you know, working in the union and going to school, I had absolutely no time for a long time. Yeah. You know, there was so many years that I didn't get to go home for Christmas. You know, my mom and I still talk about it today. She's like, you remember you went about 5 straight years without seeing us?
Oh, my goodness.
I did. I mean, yeah. I mean, I was just getting hooked up with so many different things. I was going to Europe a lot. I was going to Japan. I was doing Mexico. I was just everywhere around the United States. And then you get hooked up with a company and, you know, and that, you know, schedule. And then when you're home, you're going to work because you know you got to build something for your future after wrestling.
Yeah,
you know, so yeah, I went about 5 years, and then before that, I think I went out 2 years. You know, and then before that, I went a couple of years. You know, so there was so many times I didn't get to see my own mother for years.
Yeah,
gosh,
you know, but now that I'm retired, and that's why, you know, I get to be reacquainted and get to kind of know, you know, get to know my family again. It's really cool, actually, you know, even though I missed a lot. Still get, you know, my daughter, you know, we're, what, 3 years now. I know more things about her now than her growing up her whole life. You know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. But it's good.
But,
you know,
we're glad that you're able to do it all now, though.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I couldn't imagine not seeing my wife for 2 days, let alone 5 years. Jeez.
Well, wrestling, you need to be single.
Yeah.
You know,
sounds like
No, you really do. I mean, I tell all the young guys, they're like, look, dude, trust me from experience. Just don't date anybody, you know, because you're going to be traveling all over the place. You're not going to be faithful to anybody. And then whenever it happens and you get caught, there's going to be an absolute drama, mm-hmm. you know. So why even put yourself in that position, you know? Trust me, the drama's not worth it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was one of those guys, you know. So, yeah, but after a while, you just say, you know what, instead of dating anybody, I'm just going to be single, yeah. you know. And I did. I stayed single throughout the majority of my whole wrestling career.
Gosh.
But I had a lot of fun, too.
All right. Well, Kid Cash, thank you so much. Listeners, if you've never seen Kid Cash wrestle, do yourself a service. You can find his matches on WWE Network, on the GWN app, on YouTube. Make sure you go watch this man wrestle. It was absolutely phenomenal. Kid, I want you to put over the Aero Club one more time and let our listeners know where they can find you.
Well, real quick, yeah, I was going to say, if you do want to see me wrestle, the only real show that I do is the IRW. It's out in Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, you know, that area out there. It's with the Aero Club. Hawk, Joe, myself, and Desi, we are the Aero Club, you know, so I'm kind of the senior advisor. And I tag team with them whenever they need me and stuff. But, you know, I got me an outfit made for it and everything like that. I'm going to be doing WrestleCade coming up in November. And I'm going to actually be wrestling next week in Nashville, Tennessee against PJ Black Overload.
That should be a good match.
Yeah. I didn't know who the guy was, and people been explaining to me who he is, so I looked him up. He's pretty good, yeah. So hopefully my old body can get the kinks out and actually wrestle. Because with the tag team, that's what I've been doing, just tag teaming, yeah. You know, and, you know, not doing too much, you know, but looks like this kid's going to bring it, so I guess I'm going to have to start watching the old ECW videos.
There you go, get some inspiration, huh?
No, I just got to remember the damn moves. I can't remember half the stuff I used to do.
Oh, gosh.
Kid Cash, again, I can't thank you enough. This was awesome. We really appreciate your time tonight.
Yeah, I'm sorry that we went overboard, but oh, my gosh, it was just too good.
No problem, man. No worries. If y'all guys want to do it again, feel free to let me know, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, we will definitely hit you up.
For sure.
And next time you're in Texas, let us know.
Yeah, for sure. We'll come check it out.
Yeah, well, I'll be coming out there, I think, the next couple months or something with IRW. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we wrestled the Von Erich kids a lot.
Oh, cool.
I've had quite a few matches with those guys. The last one I did with them was in, right outside of Dallas there, where the Von Erichs are from. Shit.
Oh, I can't remember the city.
Starts with a D, I think. And but anyway, they're something green, their football team there, their big
Denton.
College football team.
Denton.
Yeah, Denton. Yeah, that's it, yeah. So, yeah, we wrestled there at college on the field, and it was me and Joe and Tatanka. And he's part of the Aero Club, too, by the way. Oh. And we wrestled Iceman Parsons, okay? I don't know if y'all remember this guy, but he's a legend. And the Von Erich boys. And Marshall and his brother there. But, yeah, man, it was absolutely just very cool. Sold out. Dude, we were in this after the football game. We didn't even get in the ring till like 11 o'clock.
Wow.
And the crowd still there.
Wow.
Just to see. Oh, man, it was awesome. I was swearing to everybody they're going to leave. Like, nobody's going to wait around for wrestling after a football game. Are you crazy? But they did. The Texas people love wrestling still.
Yeah, we do.
It's awesome. So, but you guys from Texas, you got to remember Iceman Parsons.
That's not ringing a bell to me. And
you got to be kidding me. World class, the Von Erichs, man, all those guys.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe I don't know who Iceman Parsons is. And
Chris Adams, all those boys.
Yeah, I know Chris Adams. Iceman Parsons, it's just not real. I got to look him up now. Iceman Parsons. Yes, the guy with the craziest hair I've ever seen. Iceman Parsons.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he's like 70 years old, man, but it was awesome. I mean, it was just fucking great, you know. it was a great time. And then we went to Whataburger.
Yeah. Oh, you got to.
Got to have Whataburger when you're in Texas. Kid, let our listeners know where they can find you on social media.
I'm on Twitter, of course, and Facebook. And the Facebook's David Cash. Dave Cash. Yeah, David Cash. I'm sorry.
All right.
I don't really. I haven't really been going by Kid Cash too much in my retired life.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine so.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Kid
Cash.
Well,
I told him if I did come back out and I started wrestling full time, I was going to drop the kid altogether. You know, I'm almost 50 years old now. So I can't be calling myself Kid Cash no more.
Yeah.
Hey.
We'll call him Unc Cash.
I like it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Sweet, man. Yeah, anytime.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. Thanks.
Oh, my God. What an interview with Kid Cash. That was probably one of my favorite interviews that we have done on the Smart to Death podcast so far. He was just a fantastic talker, great stories, and I cannot wait to have him back because Anthony and I didn't even scratch the surface with this guy. So we're excited to have him back eventually so we can continue some of these stories. But, guys, if you like that interview, you can become a patron on patreon.com/smarttodeath, and you could have gotten that interview over a week ago. So be like Brandon McKinney, Natalie Evans, Papa Suda, Robert Jackson, 720 Wrestling, Warren Hayes, Zach Humphrey, and Kevin Cito. You be like them. Be like them. And get some of these awesome interviews early because you cannot tell me that was not worth that $1 a month. And of course, if you want to support us in other ways, you can go to prowrestlingtees.com/smarttodeath. We just released a new design, so make sure you go grab that thing. Sorry, my dog is walking out. Of course, you can follow us on all social media at Smart to Death. And of course, the best way to help us out is go to iTunes, rate, review, subscribe. That way, we become number one in your ears, number one in your hearts, and that way, we'll be number one on the charts. All right, well, for Anthony, I'm Kyle. We'll see you next week.